Hello, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun for Thursday, December 4th, 2025. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Gady, and today our front page articles include No One Knows What's Happening, Appellate Court Sides on Short-Term Rentals, and Planet's Curriculum Launched for Young Learners. So the article at the top of the page is titled, No One Knows What's Happening. NCHC employees speak out on insurance muddle as CEO seeks fix. And this is written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun Staff reporter. Following the Arizona Daily Sun's report last week that North Country Healthcare had abruptly terminated the health care plan for its hundreds of employees while facing a federal lawsuit alleging the organization collected paycheck deductions for premiums but never paid the insurer, CEO Ann Newland wrote to the staff on Sunday promising full transparency. But Newland's words rang hollow to some of the dozen current and former North Country employees who have spoken to the Arizona Daily Sun in the past week, alleging persistent dysfunction and mismanagement at the organization's community health clinics. I've heard it before, the spouse of a current employee said, I've seen variations of that letter. I believe it as far as I can throw it. Newland's letter, which the Arizona Daily Sun viewed, did not directly address the issues of vanishing paycheck deductions or employees' unexpected claim denials and medical bills. Nor did it clearly state whether the company would reimburse employees for those unanticipated costs, which have risen to tens of thousands of dollars for some. The letter did say that North Country is in an unprecedented situation with serious financial challenges, and that the organization has retained restructuring professionals ahead of a potential Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing. And for the first time, Newland named the buyer North Country has been courting, El Rio Health, a community health provider operating in 16 locations throughout Tucson. El Rio is exploring the possibility of a potential acquisition of certain of NCHC's assets, Newland wrote. Newland also said the company would launch an individual coverage health reimbursement arrangement, ICHRA, in order to ensure employees have immediate and long-term access to health coverage. An ICHRA allows an employer to provide reimbursements to employees who purchase their own health care coverage, up to a limit determined by the employer. Newland did not specify whether this new arrangement would include retroactive compensation for the unplanned medical bills employees have accumulated since North Country allegedly stopped paying its insurer, Blue Cross Blue Shield, sometime earlier this year. She concluded her letter with a promise that a major update with specific details on the long-term plan to ensure financial stability would be coming in the next 2 weeks, no later than December 15th. One person who still works for North Country said the letter was similar to what they'd heard in prior meetings, when Newland just kept talking in circles and trying to candy coat things. "You're not taking ownership of your part, and it doesn't answer anything," they added. Confusion, fear, and anger. To protect the individuals who have reached out to discuss their experiences at North Country, some of whom are still employed with the organization, and others of whom are already employed elsewhere or seeking new employment, the Arizona Daily Sun will not be publishing their real names or other identifying information. Multiple people said the cancellation of employees' health insurance and aggressive cost-cutting efforts are having an impact on morale at North Country's clinics, creating a huge emotional strain on employees and their families. "The tension is high," said one recent former employee, Jessica, these names are all in quotes, by the way, who still has friends working for North Country. "No one knows what's happening." A current employee, Mary, said she had canceled some upcoming doctor's appointments after learning that her insurance coverage was effectively moot. "It's really hard to focus on taking care of other people when you thought you were being taken care of and you're not," Mary said. Another current employee, Elizabeth, said she was concerned the company might not be able to cover payroll. "I really feel very distracted," Elizabeth said. "I'm not very focused right now, and I'm trying my best to focus on the patient. I'm just not with it." She's facing multiple thousands of dollars in unexpected medical expenses, along with the uncertain prospect of trying to find new employment. She is experiencing moments of depression as a result, and it's scary as hell. Quitting has become a common topic of discussion. Some employees might be able to move on relatively easily, but for others, the values that motivated them to work at North Country in the first place make it more difficult to let go. "We're the safety net of the community," Mary said. "We take care of the most vulnerable people." That sense of mission, purpose, and even community obligation can weigh on employees' decision-making. Susan has a spouse who is currently employed with North Country and said that was a major factor he was weighing as he tries to decide whether to look for a new job. "He values his patients," Susan said. "He knows he is the last line of defense, essentially, for hundreds of people, and walking away from that is not something he is taking lightly." That leaves them in the difficult position of trying to balance their family's immediate needs against the needs of the larger community. What do we prioritize? What can fall by the wayside for a little bit, Susan said, describing their thinking. Can we scale something back? With her health insurance cut off and refills on her daily medications coming due, she's considering asking her friends in southern Arizona to buy medications on her behalf at pharmacies across the border in Mexico. Her children are young enough that they don't fully comprehend the situation, which she's grateful for. "They know Mom and Dad are stressed," Susan said. "We just tell them it's Dad's work." Many of North Country's employees were receiving student loan repayment assistance through multi-year contracts with the National Health Service Corps, a program of the Federal Health Resources and Services Administration. to remain in good standing with the program, they need to work for an NHSC participating provider. At the time of writing, North Country was the only NHSC qualified provider with job openings in Flagstaff. Some of us are stuck, Jessica said. Adding that for employees in that situation, there's really no option outside of riding it out and seeing how things fall. That might leave them in the position of trying to find a new insurance plan through the health insurance marketplace created by the Affordable Care Act, ACA. But it's a bad time to be shopping for plans, given that tax credits to reduce the cost of marketplace plans are expiring at the end of this month. Premiums for ACA healthcare plans in 2026 are expected to be more than double what they were in 2025 for the average purchaser. Newland's promise of a new ICHRA did not reassure Elizabeth, who said she no longer trusts the company. North Country still has not given any answers about what happened to the deductions from employees' paychecks that were supposed to pay for their previous insurance, Elizabeth emphasized. Give my money back to me if you didn't pay my insurance, she said. To add insult to injury, some of the medical bills employees are now facing have come from North Country itself. Oh my gosh. Many employees visited North Country's clinics for their own appointments and were confused to learn their company-provided insurance was not accepted by their own company. Our own billing was contacting our own employees to say, you owe us money, Mary said. That only compounded the feeling of betrayal by the institution that many employees described. One former employee, Sarah, who also said North Country unexpectedly fired her while she was undergoing treatment for cancer, was swept into the insurance debacle through her purchase of temporary continuation coverage after her dismissal, known as COBRA coverage. The claim denials she received this fall said her employer had not paid its portion of the premium. I said that's interesting because I don't have an employer, she responded. Blue Cross Blue Shield has been helpful, she said. But North Country would not respond when she reached out for clarification. She's now on a marketplace plan and has a secondary plan to assist with the cost of her ongoing cancer care, but she is still waiting to resolve the bureaucratic tangle of previously denied claims. They've drugged me into their dirt, she said. The whole experience, Sarah said, renewed the emotion she felt at the time of her firing, including anger, stress, and anxiety. But in the long run, she said, she's actually grateful she was fired. I have to be honest with you, it's been a blessing, Sarah said, because it was difficult to work for an organization that went against my morals, my values, and my beliefs. There is and always has been dysfunction. Current and former employees said their frustrations with North Country predated the insurance issue. They described a tone-deaf administrative culture, pressure on providers to increase revenue, and a vicious cycle of high turnover. There's a general understanding that there is and always has been dysfunction within the organization, Jessica said. But she stressed, as did other sources, that frontline employees, The majority of the people at North Country should not be blamed for the company's problems. The internal chaos was not caused by frontline workers, another former employee, Laura, wrote in an email. It was caused by leadership decisions and financial errors that ordinary staff had no control over. And yet, the people who paid the price were the ones who showed up every day to keep clinic doors open and ensure patients received care. She described the organization during her time there as a system collapsing under mismanagement, fear, and decisions that put finances above patient care. Yet another former employee, Tim, said he felt the company's leaders weren't really paying attention to the community or to employees. We felt like we weren't really heard, he said. He said in the last 4 months, employee safety had become a major concern for him. North Country had cut back on security staffing despite prior incidents in which intoxicated or aggressive patients threatened employees, he claimed. I feel like safety wasn't really prioritized, Tim said. But, he added, the real concern that I had or have is just the lack of care they had for the patients. A former provider recalled a workload that she summarized as deeply insane. We were drowning in administrative work, she said. I was routinely working 60 hours, despite being scheduled for only 40. The stress led to burnout and resignations, she said, and the remaining providers were left scrambling to care for even more patients than before. You don't know the patient, you don't know the context, and something important has to happen for them. And it was unrelenting because everybody was quitting all the time, Patricia said. The news of North Country's apparent health insurance fiasco has left her disappointed and deeply saddened, but not surprised at all, she said. I'm really sad it came to this, but that place has not served its mission because of the way it's treated its staff for an extremely long time. Patricia continued, I think this is a crisis that needs to happen so North Country can be reborn. The remaining employees are weathering the storm as best they can, another person said. Trying to continue being there for their communities, working with whatever they could come up with for the patients, and helping each other cope. But there is not yet a clear resolution in sight, and rumors of mounting operational problems, delayed document shredding, and unpaid bills for supplies such as towels and gowns continue to trickle out. In court, meanwhile, there have been no new filings in the lawsuit against North Country since last week, and North Country still has not formally responded to any of the allegations it contains. Despite Newland's attempts at reassurances, it is clear some internal dissent is brewing. Her letter referenced an email circulating among NCHC employees calling on her to resign. One of the employees who contacted the Arizona Daily Sun reported that this email had been deleted from the company's servers almost immediately after it was sent. Until there is a clear path forward, and the details of how the organization allowed itself to get into this situation are revealed, many employees will likely be considering the question posed by one source for this article. Am I going to get on one of these lifeboats, or am I going down with the ship? If you are a current or former employee of North Country Healthcare and would like to share your story, contact the reporter from a personal device via email at sam.mclaughlin@dailysun.com or via Signal at mclaughlin.42. And that article was titled, Healthcare Employees Speak Out as CEO Promises Transparency in Health Insurance Situation. And that was written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. Our next article on the front page is titled Planets Curriculum Launched for Young Learners. And full disclosure, I used to work for the unit that this article is about. Area educators, scientists release free NASA initiative by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. Educators and scientists at Northern Arizona University and the USGS Astrogeology Science Center in Flagstaff have published an out-of-school space science curriculum this week as part of a NASA initiative. The Planets Project, which stands for Planetary Learning That Advances the Nexus of Engineering, Technology, and Space, is a decade-long effort. It's three units, which are designed for students in third through eighth grade, are available for free at planets-stem.org. Planets is led by the NAU Center for STEM Teaching and Learning. The center's involvement with the project started in 2015, when NASA was seeking proposals for its outreach efforts for its Space Mission Directorate that would develop new ways to share the science. Center co-director Joelle Lemaire said she wanted the lessons to focus on education happening outside of the school day, such as after-school programs, community organizations, or summer camps, as the next generation science standards had recently been released. The proposal was one of those selected, and a group from the NAU STEM Center and USGS Astrogeology Center in Flagstaff developed a curriculum with education experts from the Boston Museum of Science and WestEd. Scientists and curriculum developers created the units together from the beginning, consulting with subject matter experts and educators across the country throughout the process. The first 5 years were spent developing the units, and the last five were on refining them and making them accessible to a wide range of students, Lemaire said. Both phases included extensive national testing. In the week of their release, the units have already been used by 500 educators and more than 150 kids, representing every state in the U.S. and multiple other countries. The goal was to create a curriculum both scientifically accurate and realistic, said USGS planetary scientist Ryan Anderson, with students completing activities that are the same tasks professional scientists and engineers do in their work. The units each include science, engineering, and planetary science components. Their activities are designed to follow the typical processes for engineering design and scientific inquiry, according to Lemaire. We like to think that planetary science is a really good gateway to STEM in general, because it's so interdisciplinary, Anderson said. It allows you to take STEM concepts like engineering and all different types of science and put them in a package that's exciting because it involves spaceships and going to other planets. The Planets team developed 3 units on remote sensing, space hazards, and water in extreme environments. Each has a science and engineering pathway educators can choose to follow. The units start with a ready, set, go activity, where SET stands for Science, Engineering, Technology, that introduces their main subject. Activities take around 50 minutes to complete, and each pathway has between 6 to 8, allowing them to be used as an individual session or for programming a series of lessons. Each unit also has an emphasis on storytelling meant to engage the students in sharing how aspects from their lives relate to the topic. In the water unit, for example, students are asked to tell a story or draw a picture that shares a water-related experience. The units are designed so they can be adapted to a variety of formats and settings and give educators guidance and resources to understand the science and adjust activities to their specific program. The curriculum also includes celebrations during which family members can come and see what their students have learned. The Space Hazard unit is designed for grades 3 through 5, while the units on remote sensing and water and extreme environments are both intended for grades 6 through 8. As with all curricula, the units are designed to introduce the concepts to students in a way that is developmentally appropriate for their age. The activities also build on each other to develop an understanding of the subject over time. As scientists, we're looking at pictures and we're interpreting the colors we see, or we're interpreting the shape of the spectrum that we see. Anderson said, a 5th grader can do that. A 6th grader can do that. They just need the correct scaffolding and guidance to know what to do. So we try to provide that well-designed curricula that builds them up to be able to do that and understand what they're doing. Students will be introduced to the concept of space hazards through discussion of everyday hazards and safety tips, such as hand washing to prevent an illness, Lemaire said as an example. After playing a card game matching those tips and hazards, they begin discussing what hazards exist in space and the concept of mitigation. Lemaire said she hopes that the units and activities will be used widely by educators. The group is also hoping to find funding to develop more units on a variety of other topics, such as the astronaut training program for the upcoming International Year of the Moon, volcanoes in the solar system, and planetary defense. We want to spark some kind of interest or curiosity, she said of the Planets units. I think everyone needs to have a certain level of STEM literacy, and we hope that this inspires them. Anderson added, I hope they learn that they are scientists and engineers, and that the science and engineering we're talking about is not some alien thing that only happens on other planets. To understand how light reflects off a planet or comes from a star, you have to understand why your t-shirt is red. There is no such thing that science, no such thing as science that is only out in the universe and not here at home. So I hope we have designed these units so that kids can make those connections. More about planets, including the curriculum materials and educator resources, can be found at planets-stem.org. And that article was titled Planets Curriculum Launched for Young Learners, Area Educators, Scientists Release Free NASA Initiative. And that was written by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. And just a reminder that you're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand. From our website, choose Broadcast Info and Audio, and then choose On Demand. Now we'll move on to our third front page story, which is titled, Arizona Appellate Court Rules in Favor of Short-Term Rentals in Sedona Mobile Home Park. And this is written by Howard Fisher of Media Services. State lawmakers meant what they said when barring cities from regulating vacation rentals, the State Court of Appeals has concluded. In a unanimous decision, the court rejected arguments by the city of Sedona that it was free to prohibit a 59-acre mobile home park from renting out its units for short-term rentals. The judges said the clear language of the laws, dating back to 2016, leave that decision up to individual homeowners. And in this case, Oak Creek Mobile Lodge has the same rights. The ruling is the latest setback for communities that have fought the law, arguing that the explosion in the number of short-term rentals has made it difficult for local residents to find affordable housing. According to court records, Oak Creek Hospitality, a limited liability company, purchased the park with the intent of renting out the mobile homes for short-term rentals. But when it inquired about getting a license, the city responded that the use is not permitted. Yavapai County Superior Court Judge Linda Wallace tossed out the lawsuit filed by the park owner. But appellate judge Jennifer Perkins, writing for the three-judge panel, said that was wrong. It starts, she said, with definitions of vacation rentals and short-term rentals to include any individually or collectively owned single-family or one-to-four house or dwelling unit. City officials argued that excludes mobile home parks, which have a different zoning. Perkins, however, said the key is whether the property is residential. She cited laws defining residential rental property to include a mobile home in a space rental mobile home park if the mobile home is owned by the owner of the rental space. And in this case, the appellate judge said, Oak Creek Hospitality says it owns most of the individual units in the park. Those mobile homes are part of the residential rental property to which the statute appears to apply. And Perkins said there are other laws to back that. One, for example, defines a residential dwelling unit as any building or structure used by people who maintain a household. And she said that law says it also means a mobile home, regardless of the ownership of the land. The city may require a mobile home owner to apply for a permit or license, Perkins said. But, she said, a license can only be denied for reasons stated in the law, a list that includes providing false information, failing to pay a fee, or if the offender is a sex offender, if the owner is a sex offender or has been convicted of certain felonies. Not only did the appellate court rule that the trial judge was wrong, it also ordered her to issue a ruling that the city cannot prohibit the company from using its property for short-term rentals on the basis that it contains mobile homes in a mobile home park. The ruling, however, might not be the last word. I expect there to be an appeal, said Sedona Mayor Holly Plug. She said her council reads the law to allow the city to regulate short-term rentals in mobile homes parks. But Jonathan Riches, an attorney for the Goldwater Institute that represented the park owner, said the appellate court decision is legally sound. He said the judges correctly concluded that the laws on short-term rentals and the preemption from local regulations is built around the idea of the private property rights of owners of dwelling units. A mobile home is clearly a dwelling unit, he said, no more or less so than a traditional house. And Riches chastised county officials for claiming that somehow mobile homes are not covered by the preemption. Anyone who wants to say a mobile home is not a home is not on terribly solid legal footing, he said. But oftentimes municipalities just don't care what the law says, Riches continued, and they're going to do what they want to do, regardless of what the legislature has said. And he said if cities are unhappy, they can ask that the law be changed. There have been efforts to do that, including proposals to limit the number of short-term rentals that can go in any one area, and requirements for minimum distances between them. Sedona has been at the forefront of many of these, with city officials estimating that close to 1 in 5 residential units are now vacation rentals, making them unavailable for housing local residents. But none of the kinds of restrictions have been approved. Of note is that the original 2016 measure was sold to lawmakers as quite something else, allowing individuals to rent out a spare room to make a bit of extra cash. In fact, that's how Airbnb got its name, the idea of an air mattress set up for a guest. For thousands of hardworking citizens, opening up their homes to out-of-state guests provides the financial breathing room they need to provide for the family or enjoy an extra expense that they otherwise couldn't afford, said then-Governor Doug Ducey in signing the bill. The reality, however, turned out to be something quite different. In some communities, homes and apartments in entire areas have been bought up by investors solely to create short-term rentals, drying up affordable housing and converting the whole area into vacation rental zones, possibilities that Ducey dismissed in 2016 as hypotheticals. Lawmakers eventually agreed to allow cities to issue some public safety regulations as requiring owners to provide a contract for who could respond to complaints and prohibiting rentals from being used for special events like weddings. And that article was called Arizona Appellate Court Rules in Favor of Short-Term Rentals in Sedona Mobile Home Park. And that was written by Howard Fisher, Capital Media Services. Next, we're moving on to the local and Arizona page where we have one obituary to read. It's for Linda Barker, June 10th, 1969 to November 27th, 2025, age 56. Passed away after a courageous battle with a prolonged illness. She is survived by her partner, Mary Lou Ney, her daughter, Brittany Pitts, mother, Mary Baker, grandson, Prince Redu, and brother, Tony Barker. She obtained her master's degree in sociology at Northern Arizona University. Her Wall of Fame reflects awards from Phi Beta Kappa, Alpha Kappa Delta, All USA Academic Team, Who's Who Among Students, All Arizona Academic Team, and Sir Optimist Ruby Awards. She served as a student advisor at Cochise Community College and taught sociology at Coconino Community College. She was loved and respected by her students. Linda was a giving friend to all. She loved to dance, travel, listen to live music, play pool, and open young students' minds. She was an accomplished baker, seamstress, and maker of good times and laughs. A celebration of life will be held December 20th at the American Legion in Flagstaff. The family asks donations to be made to Hope Cottage, a place that was close and personal to Linda. P.O. Box 426, Flagstaff, Arizona, 86002. And also on this page, we have a number of local news briefs. And let's see, it looks like they're all written by the Daily Sun staff. If they're not, I will let you know. The first news brief is called 9 Community Listening Sessions for Those Impacted by Summer Fires begin December 8th. Small businesses, community stakeholders, and residents impacted by the Dragon Bravo and White Sage fires are invited to help shape recovery priorities through a series of 9 community recovery listening sessions beginning December 8th. Coconino County has contracted AC Disaster Consulting to develop a long-term recovery plan to address the impacts of the 2 wildfires. This plan will include economic and tourism, health and social, and natural and cultural resource recovery initiatives for Coconino County, local jurisdictions, tribal nations, and Grand Canyon communities. At the sessions, county leadership and the AC Disaster Consulting Team will seek community engagement on recovery planning efforts, community impact data, and small business and community needs or concerns, and ideas to help set recovery priorities. Attendees are encouraged to join any session that may be relevant to their work or interests. All sessions are free and open to the public. Here is the list of listening sessions scheduled at locations throughout Coconino County. Monday, December 8th, 10 through 12, Marble Canyon Motor Lodge. Monday, December 8th, 2 to 4 p.m., Fredonia Town Hall. Tuesday, December 9th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Coconino Community College in Page. Tuesday, December 9th, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., Navajo Parks and Recreation Visitors Center. Wednesday, December 10th, 9 to 11 at Duke Oosleed Business Center in Tuba City. Wednesday, December 10th, 3 to 5 p.m., Naset Moonshot on Gemini Drive and Flagstaff. Thursday, December 11th, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., Tucson Town Hall. Friday, December 12th, 9 to 11 a.m., Williams Rodeo Grounds. Friday, December 12th, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., Sedona Airport. Our next local news brief is called Page Stabbing Suspect Arraigned. Jared Dylan Turquoise, accused of fatally stabbing a 16-year-old in Page on November 14th, made his first appearance in Coconino County Superior Court Monday. Turquoise, 27, was supposed to appear in person in the court's Division I. Due to a clerical error, however, he was not transported from the Coconino County Detention Facility to the courthouse that morning. He ultimately appeared via Zoom. Deputy County Attorney Javon Orocho stood in for Jonathan Mosher, who will prosecute the case against Turquoise. Jillian Marini of the Legal Defender's Office will represent Turquoise. The indictment against Turquoise charges him with one count of second-degree murder, a Class 1 felony, committed without premeditation. Marini entered a plea of not guilty on her client's behalf and asked Senior Commissioner Theodore Campagnolo, filling in for Judge Ted Reed, to set the next hearing approximately 60 days out. With no objection from the state, Campagnolo scheduled a case management conference to take place in the first week of February 2026. He also ordered the completion of a public safety assessment, a standardized evaluation often used to help determine a defendant's eligibility for pretrial release or reduced bond. Turquoise remains in jail custody. After the alleged stabbing in Page, he fled to the nearby community of Kaibato, where he was arrested by Navajo Nation police. He was extradited from tribal custody on Monday, November 17th, and transported to Flagstaff by officials of the Page Police Department. The name of the minor victim has not been publicly released. If convicted of second-degree murder, Turquoise could face a prison sentence of 10 to 25 years. Our next news brief, let's move on here, is titled CCSO Thanks Retiree for 25 Years of Service. The Coconino County Sheriff's Office last week celebrated the retirement of Detention Support Specialist, DSS, Verna Migo, who had worked at the Coconino County Detention Facility in Flagstaff since October of 2000. It's not very often that we get to share when someone completes a full retirement from our Detention Services Division, and even more rare when it is a DSS, just because of the difficult environment it is working in this field, the sheriff's office wrote in a November 26 press release. But Verna is a true testament that it is possible. According to the press release, Migo worked in many different capacities as a civilian at the jail and finished her career as the first point of contact for visitors entering the facility. We say congratulations to Verna on this huge milestone and wish her well and hope she enjoys a very well-deserved retirement, the release concluded. And our next news brief is titled Adopt a Grandparent Tags Available at Walgreens. Both Walgreens locations in Flagstaff are offering the community the opportunity to participate in Angels Care Home Health's Adopt a Grandparent event. Dedicated to bringing holiday joy to seniors in the community facing financial hardship, the event provides tags on trees in Walgreens on South Milton Road and on East Route 66 that can be selected, and the gifts purchased for those participating in the event until December 15th. The purchased items can be dropped off at Flagstaff Subaru on Marketplace Drive Monday to Saturday from 8 to 5, or Angels Care Home Health at 1020 North San Francisco Street from 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, or the Josie Montoya Community Center on Thorpe Road from 8 to 4 Monday through Thursday and 8 to 2 on Fridays by December 15th. Gifts can also be picked up by Angels Care Home Health to have them picked up by the deadline as well. And those were today's news briefs. Next, we're going to move on to another Arizona article, which is titled, Arizona Lawmakers' Bill Would Provide Tax Credit to New Mothers, by Howard Fisher, Capital Media Services. A Republican lawmaker wants to provide financial help to women who choose to give birth, saying it could provide enough incentive to deter them from having an abortion. Representative Nick Cupper is sponsoring HB 2004, actually it's just 2004, which would provide a new tax credit, an actual deduction of taxes, of state taxes owed up to $4,000 in a year there is a birth. And he crafted it with the specific aim, built right into the legislation, to encourage women in this state to carry their unborn children to full term. What makes the measure by the surprise lawmaker notable is that it is written in a way that doesn't get into legal or moral questions about abortion or attempt to regulate it. And even House Minority Leader Oscar De Los Santos said Democrats could get behind it. Cupper noted the perennial debates at the Capitol about abortion, and he acknowledged the legal right of women to terminate a pregnancy. But what's missing, he said, is a discussion of the reasons behind that. I looked at the stats, Cupper said. He added, from what I was able to see, it appears that 93% of women choosing to abort, if it's an elective abortion, they say it's a lack of finances, security, or support. And a lot of that falls on men sucking. Data produced by the State Department of Health Services, however, is a bit murkier. The agency, which is required to keep track of such information, reports that there were 12,888 abortion cases in Arizona in 2023, the most recent year for which statistics are available. But its breakdown of the reasons cited fall into different categories. Most cited in more than 93,000 cases, or 9,300, sorry. The reason listed is that abortion is elected. Another more than 4,100 declined to specify a region. And most of what remains fall into the other category, which includes everything from not wanting to have children, to financial reasons, to being unprepared, to personal, emotional, and mental health reasons. But Cupper said that, whatever the reason, there is more that the state can and should do to take care of women. If we can help support women in a financial way somewhat, why would we not? He said. And he's structured his HB 2004 in a way to help only those in most need. As crafted, it would provide a $2,000 credit in the year the child is born to single individuals or $4,000 to married couples filing jointly. But that full credit would only be available to those below the federal poverty level. That level is $21,150 for a two-person household and $26,650 for a family of three, with higher figures for larger families. That credit would be reduced above that level to the point it would disappear at 145% of the federal poverty level. Obviously, it's not for every pregnancy, because if you're wealthy, then finances aren't an issue, Kupper said. Most significantly, this would be a refundable tax credit. Individuals and couples would get an actual check from the state if the credit exceeds their tax liability. According to Kupper, that makes the most sense, as many who are at or below the federal poverty level may owe little or no state income tax. What his legislation also does is avoid the whole hot-button issue of abortion. In no way, shape, or form does it force anybody to give birth, he said. I just want to give an option. Kupper said he does not yet have any estimate of how much that would reduce state taxes. But he said that whatever the cost, this is a good cause. We spend a lot of money on stupid things as governments, and not just Arizona, Kupper said. But I think if we can spend some money on taking care of our people, that's one of the things we can agree across the aisle. De Los Santos agreed. Democrats invented the child tax credit, he said. We are always looking for ways to make life more affordable for working families and working moms. Still, De Los Santos said, there's an unanswered question of the price tag, which, with legislative budget analysts saying the state could be headed for a budget deficit. If we can find a way to pay for this that doesn't cut healthcare programs or doesn't cut education, we are very open, he said. And let's see, that article is called Arizona Lawmaker's Bill Would Provide Tax Credit to New Mothers. And you have been listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and that's the only time we have for this today. For Sun Sounds of Arizona and Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Lisa Cantor Ganey. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day. Take care.